to your order.
Yeah.
It's like, so then why?
I have a feeling someone's holding out for natural causes to do the job before the state has to. But
yeah.
If there's...
Because it's very, very few people know. It's incredibly expensive to give someone a lethal injection. Any form of the death penalty is incredibly expensive. Because there's lots of taxes and hoops to jump through
in order
to do it.
You know, if you hang them, it's just the cost of the rope. So... Don't need to find a vein either.
Yeah, just a neck. And those are pretty prevalently displayed.
Pretty sure they could find his neck.
I do believe they could. It was in the picture attached to the news article about it. So I can't imagine. If I can find it in a picture, they can find it on him.
It's WMFO Medford. The plague.
Was unpleasant. That's all I get.
It's back.
The plague is back?
Plague is back. The plague has been endemic in Madagascar for a very, very long time. They get plague every year. They have plague season.
It's the common plague?
In Madagascar. And it's usually the bubonic plague. But what has happened this year is they have an outbreak of pneumonic plague. And at one point, they had more than 2,000 cases of it. Around 400 people had died. Or no, excuse me, around 143 people had died. And there is now a growing concern that this may make its way over to the mainland in Africa. And if it does, the World Health Organization is seriously worried about its ability to spread and infect large numbers of people. The good news is plague can be treated with antibiotics. It's not antibiotic resistant, although there was some suggestion in a story today that someone may have had an antibiotic resistant strain. I still don't know all the details on that. The problem with pneumonic plague is that you can be lethally sick from it 24 hours from the point of infection. This thing moves fast.
I say, like, it's like Ebola.
This thing,
it gets you once you show symptoms, boom.
Ebola takes a couple of days to do its damage. Once you start showing symptoms, this thing will take you out in 24 hours, which may not be enough time for antibiotics to work. So,
yikes.
Another one to keep your eye on.
Yeah, try to avoid the plague. Oh, yeah. My God, it's 2017.
Don't travel to Madagascar this holiday season. Actually, in Madagascar, the number of cases has started to decline, and they think it's under control. But this is another one of those, we get these diseases flaring up every now and again.
Yeah.
And unless tens of thousands of people start dying, or it's in a place like China that has regular travel with the United States, we don't hear much about it.
Mm.
But these are things that you want to pay attention to, because the more you know about a potential outbreak in its early stages, the better you can prepare yourself in case it gets to be a big problem.
Yeah. Yikes. Worth County High School.
Worth County High School. What state is that in?
Georgia.
Georgia. Worth County High School in Georgia. Heard about a high school in Utah today, but I don't recall one in Georgia.
Well, a group of high school students from Worth County High School have reached a $3 million settlement against the Worth County Sheriff's Office after a judge ruled that law enforcement violated their civil rights by conducting a massive drug search without probable cause.
Oops.
Yeah. In April, Worth County Sheriff Jeff Hobbs and his deputy spent hours at the high school searching more than 800 students for drugs, and their search turned up empty. Attorneys for the Southern...
Wait a minute. You walked into a high school. You searched 800 students. You didn't find any drugs?
Yeah. Either
this is fake news, just on the basis of that. Somebody in that school has drugs.
Well, the way, it's not even so much the fact that they searched them, it was the way in which they did so. According to the suit, deputies touched and manipulated students' breasts and genitals and inserted fingers inside of girls' bras to check for contraband.
Yeah.
The suit also alleged that the searches revealed the students' body parts at some points. Stephen Benaud, who represented the students in the lawsuit, said Hobbs executed the search based on scant evidence and in clear violation of the students' constitutional rights. So 800 kids are splitting $3 million between them.
I want to know where those kids hit the... Yeah, you know what they're going to spend that money on?
Drugs.
Drugs. I want to know where those kids hit the drugs. Because I'm telling you, you're going to walk into any high school anywhere in America, except for maybe Utah, and you're going to find drugs in there somewhere.
False bottom of the locker, obviously.
There was always some kid who's got drugs.
I was that kid when I was in
There's
high school.
Always been a kid that has drugs.
No, that's why they have. There's these things you can get that are like locker organizers, but they have false bottoms, and you can put drugs in there. We're talking when I was in high school, so this is like over a decade ago.
Let me ask
I'm
you
sure
a
they've come up with way cooler stuff since then.
Is this a well-to-do high school? Is this a high school in a wealthy or affluent area?
I mean, whenever I hear that it's a county high school, I always think no.
Yeah.
Because it's Worth County High School. It's not like it's like...
Yeah, so it's rural.
Peach Academy.
It's a magnet school.
Like it's
It's a magnet school. Because I'm wondering if the kids aren't just keeping the drugs in their cars, and the cops should have gone through the cars to figure out where the drugs are.
But, well, the point being that, I mean, that's what, honestly, when I was in high school, if I didn't have that on me, I would always have it in my car. But the main basis of this whole controversy is the fact that they didn't have a warrant or probable cause.
Right.
So that is...
Well, hang on a second.
Well, so Worth County is located in the south-central portion of Georgia. As of 2010 census, the population was 21,679 of the entire county. So it sounds to me as though it's a...
farm country.
Yeah.
Kids are driving to school. So hang on a second. You say there's no probable cause. These are high school students, right?
I mean, I guess you could argue that's probable cause in and of itself.
So they are the Utes. And who has the drugs? The Utes. Therefore, by virtue of being Utes, I believe the police have probable cause.
Please stop pronouncing it like that.
And should have prevailed on this case.
Well, that's the main case against it was literally just that it was completely unfounded. Like the evidence they had was literally just that it's like, oh, it's teenagers, they probably have drugs. That was all of their evidence.
Yeah, that's all the evidence that you need. They're teenagers, they have drugs. I mean, it's like I say, you could walk into any high school in America and find drugs. I want to know how these farm boys out in Georgia are managing to hide the drugs. 800 kids, nobody has any drugs at all? That's wrong. They're not into some, they're not like worshiping he who walks behind the rose or something, are they? Is there some kind of weird cult going on at the high school?
It'd be really fun.
This is the one and only time in American history that 800 high school kids will be searched and no drugs will be found. This is it.
Well, you have to realize, too, that this is, what we're talking about is a very religious area. It's a very, it stands to reason that
it's religious it is. People are doing drugs.
Yeah, but usually the drugs they do down there are like booze and butt sex. Like, it's not.
No, they got the, no. Marijuana grows pretty well in that part of the country.
That is true. That's tobacco country.
And that's also moonshine territory down there. So, you know.
Yeah, but moonshine's not illegal.
Maybe they weren't searching the kids for shine. 800 kids, no drugs.
Get police, a lookout for that shine, Popo.
800 kids, no drugs. I call that police fail. Fire the entire police department. Get someone in there who knows what they're doing. Speaking of the South, Roy Moore.
Oh, that's the Alabama judge.
Yep.
Who is alleged to have had multiple relationships with teenage girls, many of whom I actually listened to his interview. I listened to his interview the other morning, and he just dug himself such a hole. He was commenting, they said, the interviewer said, so were any of these girls ever under 18? Not to the best of my recollection, but I can say that I always asked the mother's permission before I dated their child. And it's like,
Okay, now here's the thing. You've got to put yourself in America in 1977 to begin with on this. At that point in time, in a place like Alabama, it was entirely common for people to get married straight out of high school.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you married your high school sweetheart, and then you went to work. You didn't go to college. You didn't do it. You
But was your high school sweetheart 32?
Well, now here's the thing. Somebody like Roy Moore, who went to college and got an advanced degree, would be unusual in some of those communities. And those people would come back, and they were incredibly admired. If you were the district attorney in town, or you were a lawyer, or you were a doctor, or something like that, you were a big deal. Because not only had you gone and been smart enough to go get the degree, you'd put the time in and got the degree, and you were coming back to serve your community. So if you were of that stature, it was not at all uncommon to be dating girls who were 16, 17, 18 years old. And as far as the families were concerned, and this actually came up in the testimony from one of them, she asked her mother, you know, what would you say if I told you that Roy, and she was, I think, 17 at the time, what would you say if I told you that Roy Moore asked me on a date? And the mother said, the district attorney, I'd say you're the luckiest girl in the world. That was the attitude back then. Roy Moore was a catch. Where this gets out of control is where Roy Moore is getting handsy with a 14-year-old.
Yeah.
Even in 1978, folks, that would not have been acceptable.
Like, she hasn't even entered high school, dude.
Mississippi, maybe. Because I know the age of consent in Mississippi was 13 years old, way longer than it should have been.
Oh, I thought it was, I don't know, 9?
No, it was 13 years old, like,
sorry,
into,
that was me in Mississippi.
Into the early 1990s, as I recall. But
that
I think
recently,
yeah, I think Alabama was a little more buttoned up than that, and it might have been 14, it might have been 16. But the optics of this in a modern setting are incredibly creepy.
Mm-hmm.
The optics of this in 1978, yeah, that's kind of the way life was. But you don't get to be putting your hands on a 14-year-old girl.
No,
that's wrong,
unless you yourself are a 14-year-old, whatever,
yeah. And by the way, I'm not defending anything this guy did. He is a pig who should not be elected to the Senate. But I am trying to provide a little historical context so that people who are like, oh, what's that old guy doing with those teenagers?
Like, it's gross, but it's not as gross as it could be.
That's the way things were back then. People got married much, much younger.
Uber.
Are we talking about the deal with NASA for the flying cars?
No, but let's talk about that later.
Because that's a thing that they're doing. I believe they were kicked out of London within the past week because they were
not... That makes sense.
Because they were not providing appropriate background checks.
Well, that's... It's... You're getting warmer.
Those are two main that I heard with Uber.
Well, two women are asking a court to force Uber to improve practices like driver screening on behalf of any riders who might have been subjected to rape, sexual assault, or gender-motivated violence or harassment in the past 4 years, according to a lawsuit filed yesterday. The new suit filed in Northern District of California seeks class action status and compensation for alleged rapes suffered by the anonymous women who filed the suit, who are being called Jane Doe 1 of Miami and Jane Doe 2 of Los Angeles. The women claim that they were sexually assaulted by their Uber drivers and claim that the company engaged in unlawful, fraudulent, and unfair practices, such as duping them into believing that the drivers would safely bring them to their destinations. The lawsuit also argues that the ride-sharing company misrepresents the safety of being an Uber passenger in general. The company said it will review the information that has been provided, but currently does not know the specific details of the women's allegations.
Who knew that not having full police licensing and background checks would be a bad idea?
Right?
Who would ever imagine in a million years that being an Uber driver would be a rapist's dream come true?
That's like the main thing that they say, as you know, as the lawsuit goes on and you read it, complaint goes on and you read it, is they say this is literally you're providing a rapist fantasy, which is having a woman that they don't know, often coming home from a bar looking really cute, you know, things like that.
She's a little drunk.
Her, you know, facilities are compromised. And she's locked in the back of a car that you are controlling and can take wherever you want.
Yeah.
I remember when the first lawsuit against Uber came out, It was a girl. It was when I lived in Los Angeles, and it happened in Los Angeles. She was going from South Central from Hollywood to South Central, and the driver drove her 45 minutes out of the way and put the child protection lock on the back door. And she finally ended up, I think, figured out a way to disable it and tucked and rolled out of the car. That shouldn't be something you have to experience for service you are paying for.
I believe mom told you not to get into a car with a stranger. I have to go back to this. And the fact that you got a little picture of somebody on your smartphone does not mean that person is not a stranger. Okay, this is an issue with Uber. What they claim is a background check does not pass police muster. And time again, Boston is one of those cases where the Boston police said, if you want to operate here, our people are going to conduct the background checks. And they came back and they touted it and they were like, fewer than 10% of our people were denied the right to drive after the Boston police background check. Well, it's almost 10%.
Yeah. If that's 100 people, that's 10 people. That's not insignificant.
Right. So 1 out of 10 of your drivers is a dangerous offender? Is that what you're saying?
And I'm sorry. Is that what you're trying to use as a defense, that it's not that big a deal?
Yeah.
If it was 1%, sure.
Even if it's 1%, that's too many.
I was going to say, that's still too many. Because as it came out of my mouth, I was like, no,
because
but no.
I can call a yellow cab, and there is 0% chance that I'm going to get molested.
Because they get proper background checks.
Yeah, because the police are all over those guys all the time. So, yeah, look, if you like ride-sharing services, that's great. Understand that you are getting into a car with someone you don't know, who has been poorly vetted. Boston, they've been better vetted than in most places, but somebody who has been poorly vetted. And if you're a guy, if you're like me, it's not a big deal because I'm capable of defending myself. If you are a woman alone, that's a potentially dangerous situation. And if you're going to believe their web marketing and their hype, oh, we do background checks, I don't know what to tell you.
And this, ladies, is why I recommend Uber or not. Take self-defense lessons.
Yeah.
I can put someone in a half Nelson with the rest of them.
General Electric.
Jack Welch started it?
No, he didn't.
Owned it? Owns it?
Ran it at one point. Didn't start it.
I thought he started it.
Thomas Edison started it.
I mean, I know he started General Electricity, but I didn't realize he actually started GE. Learn something new every day. In that case, I have no idea, clearly.
General Electric announced that it will stop making the light bulb.
What?
The product that Thomas Edison used to launch the company's forerunner in 1880.
Oh, there we go.
General Electric also halved its dividend amid slagging revenues and announced that it would focus on its health, power, and aviation businesses in the future. So I believe it is 127 years, General Electric has made light bulbs. They're selling off the light bulb division.
So that means there's a huge light bulb market to capitalize on.
And here's the interesting thing. There probably isn't, because the conventional light bulb...
I was being facetious.
The light bulb as we know it is very rapidly being replaced by the LED.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole concept of what a lamp is and what a light bulb is may go away in the not too distant future.
I would say half of the lamps you buy nowadays don't actually require a separate light bulb. They just come built in with an LED attached to it.
Yeah.
That you may have to replace, I don't know, in 10 years.
Yeah.
It's very interesting, though.
It is. And it's like, this is one of the biggest companies in America. This is a major local employer.
And what they were founded on.
Yeah. Thomas Edison basically took his invention of the light bulb and his alternating current.
I can't believe I didn't know that, by the way.
And created a forerunner. It was finally called General Electric after a merger in 1880. Mm. One of the earlier iterations of the company had General Electric in its name. Mm. But he not only controlled the supply and distribution of electricity, but also the light bulb. So he had every aspect of this product under his control. And that, of course, got split off over the years. Edison Electric is still running down in New York and New Jersey.
Edison Electric.
And that is... Con Edison. But there's also an Edison Electric still operating down there somewhere, too. So it's a fascinating. You think of Thomas Edison as this guy that lived a wicked long time ago and really not relevant anymore.
He's still very relevant.
General Electric is Thomas Edison's legacy. You know, that is the single biggest company that grew out of everything that he'd done. So times are changing.
Now I want to listen to a Bob Dylan song. Penn State.
Penn State. That's the college.
Tis.
Penn State fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it is. Is it 12 or 18 fraternity brothers?
17.
I've now been charged after investigators were able to recover a deleted cell phone video from one of their phones that showed them handing drinks to a young man who died of alcohol poisoning during fraternity rush week.
Yes. The district attorney in Center County, Pennsylvania, told reporters that the video confirms that Beta Theta Pi pledge Timothy Piazza was given at least 18 drinks in less than 90 minutes during a February pledge event. Listen to that number again.
I was horrified.
18 in 90 minutes.
You're making my liver crawl up my throat 18. As you say that.
Like, our listeners know Derek and I go to Tavern at the End of the World pretty much after every show.
Yeah.
We can put them back.
Yeah, yeah.
But 18 drinks in 90 minutes.
Nope.
Makes the fact that this, and for those of you who don't know, he didn't even die of alcohol poisoning. He actually died from a tumble down the stairs that caused a head injury.
Well, he fell down the stairs twice.
Yeah.
Fell down the stairs, got up, tried to go back up the stairs, fell down the stairs again, and people were just walking over him.
Yeah, and his frat brothers eventually just like put him on the couch and like put him on his side so he wouldn't choke on his vomit. But the fact that he... I mean, 18 drinks in less than 90 minutes, that alone can kill you.
Yeah.
Like, it's shocking that he didn't die of alcohol poisoning. And it's brought, what's interesting is that, and for the record, by the way, all of the charges have been thrown out until this video came to light. And now there are 17 charged, 12 are new defendants, and the other 5 were previously charged.
He was a good kid. He made a mistake.
And 5 of the charged are facing involuntary manslaughter, which carries maximum punishment of 2.5 to 5 years, and aggravated assault, which carries a maximum prison term of 10 to 20. And other charges include hazing and giving alcohol to minors. But it's kind of sparked an entire new awareness of this all over the country.
I see a lot of suspended sentences in the future for these 17 young men.
Yes. But it's the same. Texas State University recently suspended all their Greek life after somebody died of alcohol poisoning after an event. There's now about 20 colleges that the main focal point of their campus life was Greek life that have shut down all of the fraternity, not just the offending fraternities and sororities, but all of them.
Can we just, as long as we're purging bad ideas from the past, can we add the fraternity and sorority system to the list of bad things that we purge?
Well, there is, I say this because my brother was in a fraternity. He was actually president of his frat at Tulane. And there are positive aspects of it, and that it's a sense of community. It's a way to make friends that you wouldn't have the opportunity to have otherwise. It's a network that's with you for life. You go to college, you meet all these people. There are people that it's like being in a club legitimately. And you, for the rest of your life, if you're Phi Kappa Psi, whatever you are, you can look around the entire country, even perhaps the entire world, and meet all these other people who have this unspoken connection with you. And it really does. It makes me understand why fraternities and sororities, for that matter, exist. But it's things like this that make it a bit difficult to legitimize when something, and it's when something like this happens, which is happening more and more and more. especially in the past few years. But this isn't new. It's
I believe you can form those lifelong bonds with people without getting them violently drunk.
Raping, that's what I'm saying, is that without part's raping not people, necessary.
Without sticking your fingers in each other's buttholes or whatever the heck else it is that they're doing in the fraternities this week.
Well, and that's the thing is, too, the interesting part about this is that part of why none of this has come out without someone dying before is because there are very strict rules surrounding what you can and cannot say to people not in the fraternity. Whereas, like, my brother went through Pledge Week. Every guy in a frat I've known has gone through it. And you ask them what it's like, they say, I can't tell you. That's just for me and my brothers. It's a rule.
Well, and let's get it out there and let the public decide. How does that sound? Nobody signed an NDA from Harvey Weinstein. Let's start talking about it, and then maybe we'll realize that this is something we don't need to preserve. Rotten Tomatoes.
Rotten Tomatoes is how I decide whether a movie is worth watching.
Mm-hmm. You're in the right church.
I don't know. I didn't know there was news about Rotten Tomatoes.
Under fire, Shay. Rotten Tomatoes is under fire for deciding to withhold their tomatometer rating for Justice League until 12:01 a.m. on Thursday, when it will be part of their new Facebook podcast program. Film fans are upset about this because it is widely believed that Justice League is not a good movie and that this is a ploy by Warner Brothers, which is a part owner of Rotten Tomatoes via Fandango.
Suddenly everything makes sense.
To drum up a business for their film. By the way, the first Associated Press review of Justice League that went online today gave it 1.5 stars. Not looking good for the Justice League.
No, it's not. How hot all of the actors in it are.
I want someone to explain to me why Aquaman looks like the Undertaker from WWE. I don't understand that.
I'm looking at a picture right now, and that was the first thing that I thought.
Yeah, he looks like the Undertaker.
He looks like the Undertaker with the trident. And that is, or I guess that would be a...
It's a quindent.
Quindent. Yeah, I was going to say not quad dent. Quindent.
I have no idea what's going on there.
Why isn't it a trident?
Most of the reviews, not. Apparently, it's better than Suicide Squad. So, if that's
not saying too much.
If that's what you're looking for in a movie, kids, better than Suicide Squad, Justice League opening tomorrow night.
And also, please stop listening to our show if that's what you're looking for in a movie, because you clearly won't understand anything we're talking about.
855-915-9636 is the telephone number. 855-915-9636. It is WMFO Medford. When we come back, the ongoing sexual abuse and sexual harassment scandals hit very close to home for Shay Spillane and I. We'll tell you what's going on. And guys, why you should probably keep that thing in your pants here on WMFO Medford, where we offer some advice ahead of Thanksgiving for something that you should never, ever, ever, ever do, because it will ruin Thanksgiving for everyone, especially this young woman.
The coffin's heart is melting. Hi, this is James Brown, soul brother number one, always fighting. Now I'm fighting for your life. I'm fighting for your life because if you use drugs, you better leave it alone. Drugs are contagious. They're killers. Every drug is a killer. Stay away from drugs. Drugs will take your life away. And if you want to live, stay away from drugs. Because they are super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad, super bad.
A ranger station.
I'd like to report a bear hug.
Okay.
I put out my campfire and Smokey Bear hugged me.
So you drowned the fire, you stirred it, drowned it again, and felt that it was cold?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he's just letting you know you did good.
Bear hug from Smokey Bear. Status update.
I'm gonna let you go now.
There are many ways to start a fire, but one sure way to put it out. Learn how you can do your part at SmokeyBear.com.
Sponsored by the U.S. Forest Service Ad Council and your state forester.
You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. You can't touch this. My music hit me so hard, makes me say, oh my Lord, thank you for blessing me with a mind to mind and deep like me. It feels good when you know you're down. A super dope homeboy from the Oak Town, and I'm known as such, and this is a beat you can't touch. I told you.
91.5 FM Medford, WMFO. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Chase Blame. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. We're going to be here with you till 9 o'clock. If you want to give us a call at 855-915-WMFO. And tonight we're talking about what I think is arguably the biggest story of the past week, which is Louis C.K. and his not listening to MC Hammer, evidently.
Is this song inappropriate?
Wildly appropriate.
Yeah.
That's why, oh God, when you turn that on, I was just like, oh, this is way too good for the subject we're talking about.
I always struggle with those because it's sort of like, serious subject matter. I don't want to poke fun. I don't want to be, but just sometimes it's just like, Hammer time. Please, Hammer, don't hurt him.
Every once in a while, it's just Hammer time.
Yeah. Newton native.
Yes.
Boston
came up in Boston.
Yeah. Comic Louis C.K. admitted last week, after several women came forward, that yes, he used to ask women to come into his office and watch him masturbate.
Mm-hmm. And not just his office, there are various. One was a comedy duo that invited them to hang out. He invited them to hang out at his hotel room, which, by the way, is not an unusual thing.
I think that was at the Telluride Festival.
When you're a comedian, yes.
Where that one happened?
This was the U.S. Comedy Arts Festival in Aspen.
In Aspen, yeah.
But it's not an uncommon thing. I mean, especially comedians, of you who don't know the lifestyle very well.
Let's qualify what you're saying here. Asking to hang out in a hotel room is a common thing. Whipping it out and playing with it while other people are in your room is not a common thing.
Oh, no, absolutely. But I'm speaking to the fact that some of it, that's been kind of the, and we'll get to that, that's been kind of the most interesting thing about this story is the reactions that have ensued since this. And this all came out, of course, in a New York Times article that was released last week. And but what I mean is that it's not uncommon for one comedian to say to another comedian after a show, like, hey, do you want to go hang out in the hotel room for a couple minutes? It's not, that doesn't necessarily imply, especially when it's more than one person,
right.
It doesn't necessarily imply, like, you want to go hang out in my room? It's like that happens between all of us all the time in a completely platonic and innocent manner.
Here's what happens. You're booked for a show that's out of town, and the club will either give you a house, you know, they're renting a condo somewhere for the talent to stay in.
Comedy condo.
Or the comedy condo, as it is known, or they will put you in a hotel room. I used to do a place up in Maine, and we'd get a hotel room after the show.
Yeah, a lot of times it'll just be included in either the compensation of the venue to the booker, or in the compensation of the booker to you.
Right, so you get a free hotel room, and you go up, and you do your set, and you get paid. Then you hang out at the bar, and then the bar closes. And if you are a smart comic, you have gone to the gas station before the show.
And gotten a 30 rack.
Grab yourself a 30 rack, and stuck it in the mini fridge, and you're ready to go all night.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, that's...
Because there is nothing else to do in this town.
Yeah.
There is nothing else to do in this town after the bars close.
Well, and that's the thing is that it... So I'm sure at this point everyone has heard all of the stories. Everyone has heard his apology, which I won't lie. It actually took me a couple days to read his apology because I thought to myself, what can he possibly say?
Are you buying the apology?
I'm not. I do think that given the circumstances, probably the best move he could have made, which was just to fall on his sword and say, yeah, I did it. I'm not. I do think that it's very cleverly worded insofar as that he never actually apologizes to any of the women who came forward. Also in that the way that he frames it, which unfortunately that's the thing, is I don't think anything he said was untrue, because he said to take a quote, a direct quote, I also took advantage of the fact that I was widely admired in my and their community.
Yes.
Which disabled them from sharing their story and brought hardship to them when they tried because people who look up to me didn't want to hear it. I didn't think that I was doing any of that because my position allowed me not to think about it.
Yeah.
And it's
an apology that struck me as tactical.
That's the thing, is I think that it was, which it's funny, I was speaking to my brother and his girlfriend about this. Hi, Dan and Sophia, if you're listening. But I was talking about how his PR rep actually quit. And my brother's girlfriend said, well, yeah, that makes sense. And then me and my brother brought up the point, well, no, this is why you have a PR rep. It's like having auto insurance. There's not going to be a car accident, chances are, but when there is, you're really glad they're there because that's what they're there for.
But the thing is, the PR rep that Louis C.K. hires, as somebody who moves in those circles and works in that space, mm-hmm. the PR rep that Louis C.K. hires is there to book talk shows for his next film opening.
Oh, yeah.
And to promote his new book and to promote his new television series and to make sure that he gets invited to the right parties out in Los Angeles to talk about his Fox series. Not to deal with, oh, you occasionally invite women into your room and then masturbate in front of them.
But in theory, that should be what the PR, or not what solely what they're there for, but in theory
that's what a crisis PR firm is for, and I believe he retained one.
I said to Sophia, I was like, and she agreed, she's like, actually that's a really good point. I said to Sophia, the fact that his PR rep quit over this is telling to how big of a disaster this is.
And
I do, I think that his apology was very, at the time I said to myself that what I did was okay because I never showed a woman my dick without asking first, which is also true. He's very, even in his apology, he's so arrogant and so like, get a load of me. Like, you know,
but here's the thing. I sincerely believe, and I've heard these rumors for years. We have all heard these rumors for years.
That's, I think, the craziest part about it, to be honest.
And just based on the rumors, I've always had this feeling that what he was doing, because he's accused of masturbating, like asking women, will you come into my office and watch me masturbate? In the case of Aspen, he just invited the women up to his room and then did it without asking, according to them. I believe them. Another woman said that he masturbated while he was talking on the phone with her.
Well, technically, not to correct you, but technically they said that he did ask and they thought he was kidding.
Oh, that's right. Yes, he asked and then before, you know.
I was like, what?
They giggled and then the towel comes off. I believe in his mind, in the times that he was doing this, he did not believe that this was a form of sexual assault.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I do agree with that.
Number one, I've asked permission. And number two, I'm not actually touching anybody. That doesn't mean that a woman wants to sit there and be exposed to that. Exposing yourself under the law is a form of sexual assault. And the fact that he completely fails to get the fact that he is Louis C.K., and that gives him the opportunity to do this is the real problem, as you point out, Shay, with the apology. But let's take this. I want to bring this back down to a more personal level because you are a woman in comedy.
Yes.
I'm sure you have seen and heard a number of things over the years.
Well, that's, it's been kind of I guess, two sides of the fence reaction in terms of, because I've been doing comedy for, it'll be 8 years in January. And I've seen both sides of reactions to this, which are, number one, comedians blindly defending CK, saying
he's brilliant,
so you have to separate the art from the artist.
No,
you saying whatever, it's funny that he did that. I've even seen that. But on the flip side of that,
that guy, and it was a guy that said that, that guy, defriend on Facebook.
Already done.
That guy's a sociopath.
But on the flip side of that, there has been, and I think that a lot of this, in the wake of the Me Too movement, in the wake of everything that's happening with Harvey Weinstein and with Bill Cosby and with all these powerful men who have taken advantage of their position, it has created this level of empathy amongst male comedians. I know, like, I'll give you a perfect example. The story broke last Friday, and I was at a comedy club with like four male comedians around me, and we started talking about the Louis C.K. thing, and they asked me, they said, so is that something that happens to you sometimes? And I said, no, it's not something that happens to me sometimes. It's something that happens all the time. And I'm not saying that anyone's ever whipped it out and jerked it in front of me, but so
you don't know what I'm doing under the desk right now.
So often, hands where I can see them, Derek.
Oh, yeah, they are. All right.
But so often there, and even comedians that mean absolutely no harm, that are, think they're making some stupid comment in passing, and that it's, and a lot of times it doesn't bother me because I have a thick skin, but there have been, over the course of last week, or the last 5 days, whatever it is, there have been multiple men that I've worked with for years who have either reached out to be better informed about it, asking questions about it, asking how real this is in the life of a female comedian, and others saying, actually coming out and saying, if I ever did anything to offend you, I'm really sorry. And like I said, I mean, I have a thick skin. I can take a joke. A lot of times things would be like so just harmless in intention, but it is something that's very, very real in my life and in the life of, I'd say, every female comedian. And especially because there are, the thing with the Harvey Weinstein thing and the thing with Louis C.K. even, is that there are women who, I hate to say this, but there are women who will be okay with it. There are women who sleep their way to the top. There are women who, if someone more powerful than them gives them the opportunity to do something less than respectable to get ahead, they'll do it.
This is a point that I think cannot be stressed enough, because there are, I believe, four women who came forward and accused Louis C.K. That doesn't mean
five, but
five.
Four,
you're
groups
correct.
Of women.
Right. Yes.
Because so, one's a duo.
Right. Okay. So you have the, four, but we have four cataloged incidents. Mm-hmm. Folks, this did not just happen four times.
Oh, no.
The fact that this happened four times means that it happened way more times.
Yeah, it means
that
it happened like 100 times.
If it was one woman that came forward, it could be like, well, maybe he did it a few times. When it's four, this is part of the guy's whole MO. How old is Louis C.K.? How many years has he been doing this?
Yeah, like over 20 years.
So,
and he's been famous for most of them.
Yeah, exactly. So there are a lot more women that were exposed, no pun intended, to this, who are basically looking at it and saying, I consented. And I consented because he is rich and powerful and has access, and I don't want to lose my career.
Well, and that's the thing of it. Is
and
that
there are women who were upset by this who won't come forward now
for the
because
sake of
they
career.
Still fear the ramifications of it.
Well, and it's a vicious cycle, because for every woman that's going to come forward and say this isn't okay, there is at least one woman who will do it for the sake of getting ahead. And then that conveys to someone like Louis C.K., to someone like Harvey Weinstein, this behavior is acceptable in some instances, which makes them continue with that sort of behavior. And that's the only, and I obviously will in no way defend their behavior, but that's the only part of this that makes me think, not that it's acceptable, but that it's understandable, because it's just like, if you get away with something once, that tells your brain, okay, I can just get away with this, so I might as well just keep doing it because I like to. And it is, it's, I mean, it's.
And comedy is a particularly vulnerable area for women.
Well, especially, it's a male-dominated industry.
But it's not just that it's a male-dominated industry. It's a very rough and tumble industry from a content perspective, where, mm-hmm. you know, if you ever want to be thoroughly horrified by the things that people can think, go listen to some comics talk after a show. And the stuff that we would never say on stage would make your skin crawl, because all of that creative energy can be turned into some very, very dark places. And you've got this whole constant undercurrent of, I'm just being funny, or I'm just, you have people who deliberately provoke other people. You have every aspect of the autism spectrum recommended. You have legitimate sociopaths. True. Comedy tends to attract the wounded. And you're expected to go up there and be vulnerable. And the fact that you're vulnerable on stage lends itself to a sort of easy intimacy.
Yeah.
Off stage. That can get read the wrong way very easily. And it puts women in a particularly vulnerable place.
Well, and even the sheer fact that, like I said, and that you're entirely right, but being a woman in comedy, there is a lot of pressure to be able to hang with the boys and to be able to be as vulgar and open and fill in the blank as the rest of them. And as you just said, it can be misconstrued. Just because after a show I'll drop an F-bomb and joke about going down on someone doesn't mean that I want you to push me into the bathroom and have your way with me.
Right.
And that's a
lot of
times.
But because we got all these psychos running around, there are guys that will take that
and
that
it,
way.
And it does. I was saying, that's, I mean, the sheer fact that Louis C.K., who is a seemingly normal guy, he's not even what I would consider one of the crazier of famous comics, that he's capable of this. Which, by the way, it's worth mentioning that, much like when the Harvey Weinstein story broke, everyone's acting all shocked. This has been known about in the comedy community for years.
Yeah.
When I started doing comedy, the biggest shock to me about when the story broke was that the comedy duo wasn't Garfunkel and Oates.
Yeah.
Because that story about the hotel room and the female comedy duo, when I started comedy in 2010, I heard that story.
Yeah.
This is not new information.
No.
It's just now confirmed.
And there's a lot of that even at the local level. There's a lot of that whispering that goes on, which is,
oh yeah,
you do not want to be alone in a room with so and so.
Don't get in a car with,
yeah,
I'm not going to say his name on the radio because I have class. But I really don't, but I still just don't feel like fighting with Boston comedians.
Yeah.
But yeah, this is it's almost annoying, to be frank, that all of a sudden everyone cares, because this is something that's been a real part of, I told you, I had male comedy friends reach out to me when we were at Nick's Comedy Stop last week, and they said, they kind of, you know, nonchalantly were just like, so that, does that sort of stuff happen to you? And I'm like, all the time.
Yeah.
And you should have seen the looks on their faces, like, seriously? It's like, yeah, man, this is a part of my everyday life. It's a part of being a woman in general and of being a female comedian specifically. This is just something, and you learn to deflect. You learn different tactics to make it so that, like, I can't tell you how many times I've had a male comic, female comic as well, actually, but I'm pretty hot. But I've had a comic hit on me, and I've had to find a graceful way of rejecting them while still being able to maintain a proper professional relationship. And that's the thing of it, is that, as you were saying earlier, this is someone who can make or break your career. So having someone like Louis C.K., it'd be like if you wanted a career in politics and Donald Trump propositioned you.
Yeah.
And I hate that that's the example that popped into my head, but it's a matter of everyone wants integrity, but at the same time, you've been working so hard for this dream. And it's not even that saying no would just mean that you don't have that person's blessing anymore. They could legitimately scorch your entire earth.
Yeah. And Louis C.K. was a pretty significant gatekeeper in the whole thing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, think of the things that he's produced. Think of the things that he's written. Think of the things that he's invested in.
A kind word from Louis C.K. can get you in a lot of doors.
Yes. And a bad word from Louis C.K. can get you blacklisted.
Correct.
And I think that therein lies the largest issue with this is that I'm not defending the casting couch. I'm not. I find it very interesting that the one woman who actually allowed him to do this multiple times didn't want her name released.
Yeah. Because she still has a career. And that was a stepping stone for her.
Exactly. And that's the thing, is I'm not endorsing the casting couch by any means. And were I in that position, I would say no. I would very much like to think, but I've never been in that specific with someone that powerful position. And it is, you don't have much time to think about it. And at the end of the day, you have to, there's multiple different kinds of danger involved. Let's put it that way. And I really can't fault any of the women that this happened to, regardless of the implications or the whatever. The position that they're put in is an impossible one, which is what makes this all so upsetting and unfair.
In listening to you and knowing my journey in comedy and knowing your journey somewhat in comedy, I cannot help but be impressed at how much harder women work to get to the same places that men do. Because the things that you describe are never an issue for us. 855-915-9636 is the telephone number. On the Towel Mikey D is coming up in less than 10 minutes. But before that, we're going to tell you our favorite things from the past week and the strangest things from the past week here on WMFO Medford.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome.
FM WMFO Medford. You are listening to The Big Picture. I am Shay Spillane. With me, as always, is Derek Gary. And we're here with you for a few more moments with just enough time to tell you about our favorite thing from the last week or the coming week. And I discovered this fantastic thing that I so want to do. Friends, if you're listening, we're doing this together. It's called the Amazing Scavenger Hunt Adventure. And apparently they have it in multiple cities, but it basically turns Boston, that you can do it in Boston, it turns it into a giant board game. And it's this crazy scavenger hunt adventure where it's like both a city tour and kind of like the Amazing Race. But basically you download an app and it's guided from a smartphone. And teams can make their way through well-known, overlooked parts of the city, and they solve clues and complete challenges while simultaneously learning about Boston. And it's available every day of the year from sunrise to sunset. And you start when you want, you play at your pace, and it's only $39 for a team. I'm sorry, $39.20 for a team of 2 to 5 people. Which, I mean, if you think about it, 5 of your friends, that's less than $10 each. And you can sign up online at www.urbanadventurequest.com. That's urbanadventurequest.com. I'm not kidding. I'm super pumped to try this out. It really sounds like so much fun, especially if you have someone visiting the city who's never been there. It's like it's a really cool way to see it while, you know, not just listening to someone in Revolutionary close.
Like it.
Yeah.
That does sound like fun.
Yeah, I'm going to do it. I'm really pumped.
For all those of you who are going home for Thanksgiving but not Christmas, there is a great gift idea. A Christmas gift idea I'm going to give you right now. We're trying to keep the Christmas creep out. But over the last few years, toy advent calendars have become very, very popular. And basically, it's your basic advent calendar, only instead of a little printed thing underneath the window, there is a toy there. And there is a huge variety of these things that you can get now. For years, it was just the Lego ones. Mm. Now, in addition to Lego, and there are three Lego ones out this year, Friends, City, and Star Wars. Star Wars is great for adults, too.
oh, God, Derek.
For the younger kids out there, I've already got mine. For the younger kids out there, they've got Peppa Pig advent calendars. They've got Disney's Frozen advent calendar. There's a Disney Zoom Zoom advent calendar. If you know a young girl, you may know the name Schleich. They make the best toy horses. Schleich does an advent calendar every year. The great thing about this as a gift for a kid is you go home for Thanksgiving, you see the kid, and you can give the kid the advent calendar, and a week later, they're going to start using it.
Oh, yeah. I don't even think of that because it's 25 days, right?
I haven't
been to church in a while.
24.
I forget when Advent is.
It's 24. So it's a great way to give a Christmas present to a child that they don't have to wait until Christmas to open. You can be there because they're supposed to start using it in a week.
Ah.
So I think these things are fantastic.
This might be my idea for my nieces.
By the way, for the adults on, and they run, you know, between $25 and $35 generally. You're not going to break the bank on these
which
things.
Is reasonable.
Kids love them. Adults love them. For the special adult on your list, by the way, there's a couple of adult variations out right now.
Do they come with miniature vibrators?
Here's one. If you know a guy who likes scotch and you got some money to spend, there is a bourbon advent calendar. 24 days of different
Love
bourbons.
It.
That's going to set you back $153, kids. So you better really like that guy. But for the lady in your life, or maybe the teenage girl in your life, H&M has an advent calendar, which has a different earring or ring or little accessory behind every window.
Oh my God, I love it.
So there's a bunch of these things out there.
I just sounded like more like a girl than I usually do on this. Oh my God, that sounds so awesome.
Target has a decent selection of them. You can find them online, Google Shopping. The one thing I will say, if you're thinking about getting one of these, do it soon because they tend to disappear before Black Friday.
Mm-hmm.
And after Black Friday, forget it.
You're done.
You're not going to find one.